I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to minute 40 of season 6 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast, where we take a Capra-esque journey through the 1946 classic, It's a Wonderful Life, one minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again to finish off this week is Richard Kirkham of Kirkham A Movie A Day. Welcome back to the show, Richard.
Thanks, Rob. I figured if I stick around long enough, I'll get my wings.
Well, if you'll point me in the right direction. Wait, so we're supposed to play some bells for you? Is that the idea here?
That's it. That'd help.
I don't know. I don't want you getting your wings so quickly. Yeah. I'd rather you don't have your wings soon. How's that?
All right.
Okay.
I'll live without them.
Yes. Please do. That's the goal in life, basically. All right, so minute 40 begins with George continuing to think and puff and ends with Ma Bailey having an idea. Basically, we ended things yesterday with, George seeing off Uncle Billy and continuing to contemplate what's going on in his life, what he's going to do, what he needs to do. And this minute just continues with that. He's, deep in thought. Puffing away at his cigarette. And, even though we already know that George has made up his mind, he knows he's staying, he's not going anywhere, and, he will continue to run the building and loan. That's what it basically comes down to. And, as he's standing there, what's really interesting is you hear like a train horn. Which, yep. On the one hand, it goes to show that their house is not that far from the train station where we just were at. It is a relatively small town, but the train station is relatively close to the Baileys. But it goes back to what we were talking about on Monday about the fact that is one of George's favorite sounds, and it's also a third way of looking at it. It's a reminder that you're not getting on that train.
It's leaving and he's not.
That's right. Sorry. I like the way that they placed that in there. He knows his responsibility, and as much as he wants to go on that train and hear that anchor being drawn up, and it's just not going to happen for him. I've been thinking all week about your question from Monday, and I still don't really have an answer if there are sounds that I like to hear. It's been keeping me up at night over this week, Richard.
Well, maybe one of those sounds will pop up in the middle of the night and you'll say, oh, there's one. I should remember that and tell Richard about it.
That's right. I'll WhatsApp it to you. We are 8 hours apart, but I'll send something to you and you'll look and you'll say, why the hell is he sending me something at that hour by him? And then you'll know why. It's because I thought of the sounds that I wanted to, mention. Who knows? And then, we hear people chattering, and you can see in a blurry background, that someone is walking towards him. It's not there yet. George just looks very gloomy, and I love how he just opens his jacket pocket and pulls out a whole bunch of travel brochures. And we can actually read what it says on them. Did you take those extra few seconds to actually read what's written on the
Oh
brochures?
yeah, there's student travel to, I don't know, I forget, South America, I think it is, and it's some of the job stuff that he's looking at,
Right.
Uruguay and Argentina, South America, that kind of thing,
That's right. So,
travel clubs in Europe, it's all the stuff that he dreamed about.
yes, that's right. So basically, one of them says travel with the formal student tours at College Travel Club, where we see a steamboat. We don't know where that one goes. And then we have another one that says South America, New York to Brazil, Uruguay, Argentina, schedule and passenger rates. So these are his dreams and his goals. And once again, he's gonna. You can see that they're already pretty battered up, these brochures. It must be like one of the things that in the middle of the night he will take them out and just look at them and dream, that I'll be able to go to one of these places and stuff like that.
I think that's exactly what's implied by this. And when what happens in a moment is that he tosses them away because he's coming to the realization that the decisions that he's made are going to keep him from doing these things.
That's right. That's right. He realizes that these are just pipe dreams. Do you know that there are six different types of ways that brochures can be folded?
Really?
Yes.
No, I hadn't thought about that. Folded in half, tri-folded, quad folded, triangular folds, folded in origami crane style so that they can be distributed on the street corner in an interesting way. I have no idea, and I've never thought about it ever.
So there is the letter C trifold, which basically means that you fold the paper in three equal parts. Then you have what's known as a gate trifold. Do you know what that is?
Yeah, you have two sides that fold in and
Right.
on themselves
Okay. Then
into
you
a
have,
center spot.
that's correct. Then you have the roll double gate fold.
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but
That
I'm sure you do.
that's where it's basically folded in four times. You have the both sides are folded in, and then it's folded in a second time.
It starts sounding like a map.
Yeah, exactly. That's what it basically looks like. Then you have what's known as an accordion Z fold.
Well, that I can imagine very easily.
Right.
You got a front and a back page, and everything else is folded over accordion style in the middle.
That's right.
You
Again,
pull it apart.
it's also like there are maps that are like that also. Then you have a double parallel fold,
No clue.
which what you do is you fold the paper in half, and then each of those halves are folded again.
Sounds like what you would do to create a stump for the kitchen table when it's not balanced.
Possibly. And then the third type is a double right angle, or also known as a French fold, which basically they look like squares. You're basically folding the paper in half, and then you fold it the other way. You fold it, vertically, so that it's like half the size of a page type of thing. That's how it looks. But nowadays, people just have e-brochures. You don't really have to worry about these type of brochures anyway. Obviously, for him to want to go to South America, we talked about it earlier in the week, that they're looking for engineers. So I don't think that's really going to help him since he is not an engineer.
Yeah, I don't know what he studied in high school, whether and what kind of credits or requirements they would require for people.
Well, ever since he's a
It's
kid, he's
it
wanted to have a
existed
harem, so.
it existed in a period well before most professions had certifications.
Correct. That's true. And then he's looking at these brochures, And he like just takes them and basically violently throws them away. You know, he's as much as he wants to be there for Harry, he knows that he has to give up his dream for this, and just throws them. Going back to the fact that here we have another character in a movie who's a litter bug. I mean, last season we talked about the litter fines in Washington, D.C. If you happen to just throw gas canisters in the snow at the airport instead of picking them up properly. So I'm assuming in Bedford Falls, when we're gonna have Bert the cop walk around and fine George for throwing those brochures.
Well, if it's on his own front lawn, he probably would not get a fine, but he might get a citation to clean up his own yard.
That's true. That's true. And then, as I was talking about before, in the background, we see, it's unfocused, but we see someone come out of the house and walk towards George, and we can immediately see that it's Ma Bailey. And she comes over, and he hugs him, and then very strangely, he kisses her on the lips, which is a strange thing to do to a mother, but I guess it's something that there are families where that is common. And she turns. He says to her, "Hello, Ma," and that's for nothing. "How do you like her? She's swell, isn't she? Looks like she can keep Harry on his toes. Keep him out of Bedford Falls anyway. Did you know that Mary Hatch is back from school? I mean, I like the way that she just, George is, she sees that George is down in the dumps and, upset about the fact that Harry is no longer going to be around, and she just quickly just changes the subject, basically saying, I'm gonna get you busy thinking about other things. You're gonna think about Mary Hatch."
She's starting to be matchmaker right now.
That's right. Well, no, but I think she just wants him to be in a better mood. And talking about Harry, Ma Bailey already knows the problem here. That George is going to have to stay, or George is going to feel forced to stay in order to keep the building and loan open. So, let's just switch the subject, and we'll talk about something that'll maybe make you happy. We'll talk about Mary. I don't know.
Well, two lines later, she's basically pairing him up with her.
That's right.
Nice girl, Mary.
Did
Kind
you?
that'll help you find the answers, George.
That's right. Did you know that Mary Hatch is back from school? Came back 3 days ago. Nice girl, Mary. Kind of'll make you find the answers, George. Do you think he's really paying attention to what she's saying, or he's just in such a mood that he's just gonna constantly be saying,
Well, he's saying mostly because he's distracted, but he hears what she's saying. But he's not taking any of it seriously.
That's right. Again, I think she's just trying to distract him because she sees that he's in distress. And realizes that only Mary is the one that can make him happier. Which is a little strange because like how often do you think she bumps into Mary? I mean, next week she'll talk a little bit more about the fact that that Mary's face lights up every time she sees George, but she's been back for 3 days. She hasn't seen that yet, at least on this visit.
Well, remember, they have 25 years of history. Mary has been part of, she's been a neighborhood kid, probably hanging around, mooning after George all that time since they were 9 and 10 years old. Moms see that kind of crap.
That's true. That's
And
true.
I think she and Mrs. Hatch were friends also.
What makes you think that?
I seem to remember that they had some interactions with each other at another point in the movie.
No, the only time we see them together is at the wedding. If I remember
Well,
correctly.
I'm not in that minute, so I'm not going to challenge you on it.
It's not a question I'm trying to challenge, but no, I'd be very interested if there is something else that I didn't that I neglected to
Aren't
note.
they volunteers together at the
Ah, that's
Red
right.
Cross or something like
Very right.
that?
When they have the when they talk about what people did in the war, they say that the two of
Right.
them were, I think, sewing uniforms or something like that. Yes, you see, you're right. There you go. You see, you didn't want to challenge me, but you're right. There was another scene where they were together, but that's years later when they're basically in-laws.
Yeah. But you know, I don't know what it was like when you were growing up, but most of the mothers of the kids that I was friends with were friends with the mothers of the kids that I was friends with, you
Correct.
know.
Yeah, that's the way it is. You know, you're because this way you have carpools
Exactly. That's your neighborhood.
that's right. That's true. But she's really pushing this. You know, she was really pushing for Mary, which is interesting.
It is.
You know, maybe you know. Because Marty is George's age, and basically Mary's same age as Harry. So,
Yeah, what's that? There was a Matthew McConaughey film a few years ago, Failure to Launch. I think that George is a little bit like the Matthew McConaughey character, and his parents need to push him a little bit, and she's the only parent left.
Okay, and that's fair. Those with Sarah Jessica Parker, wasn't it?
I'm not even sure I saw the movie. I just know of it.
Okay. That's fair too. That is allowed. Yeah, so I mean again there isn't much more that's going on in this particular minute. Did you have anything else you wanted to say about the scenes of this minute? See, I know I need to clarify that with you.
No, nothing in the scene, the minute that we've been looking at that I wanted to add to it. It was, very quiet. I think we've talked about it more than I thought we'd be able to talk about it, so we're good.
No, I have plenty of other things. If you want to talk about Brazil, Uruguay, Argentina, you know, we have things that we can talk about.
I'm good.
That's fine. All right. So every
I don't need
Friday.
the history of the steamship.
I'm sorry?
I said, I don't need the history of a steamship.
No. All right. So every Friday we have a segment called Oscar Oops. So the idea is that you know we've had the Oscars ever since 1927, and you know love them, hate them. Everyone has their own opinions as to what they think of the Oscars, whether you know whether they agree with the decisions that are made based on the voting and all that stuff. So I mean this movie is a prime example. You know, people look back and they say, how is it possible that It's a Wonderful Life did not win over Best Years of Our Lives? And then you have people who will say the exact opposite. I'm still not letting everyone know what my opinion is on that one. You'll have to wait until the final episode of this season to find out what I think about that. But so every year there's always controversy. And so I thought what would be great is to have a segment where, you know, everyone can vent about what movie they think should have won that didn't win. And the only caveat is it needs to be something that was actually nominated. So, you know, for instance, you can't choose Fool's Parade and say that you think that that should have won because it was not nominated. So,
I gotcha.
Richard, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Well, I'm just going to go in reverse chronological order, and I will save my biggest irritation for my last one. And I don't think anybody will be surprised when I start talking about that. It's not a huge irritation because the film that won was a deserving film. It's just that it won over a film that I value so much highly, so much more highly.
I have no idea what movie you must be talking about.
Yeah,
You know,
exactly.
is it a summer movie in that takes place
Yes,
in
it is.
Amity? I don't know.
Yes, it is.
Could be,
So we
possibly.
stepped all over that one. We'll get there in a minute.
You
Working
see,
backwards,
Richard, it shows I know you well enough after all these years.
that's right. In 2019, the movie Parasite won the award for Best Picture, and I like Parasite a lot. I think it's a very clever film, the good screenplay, but to me, it's not the same kind of achievement that 1917 was, and I think 1917 would have been my choice if I had been an Oscar voter that year. I think that's an incredible achievement. I thought the way the film was made was really interesting. The subject matter is important. We did get a couple of World War I stories in this time period, and another one's going to come up here right now in 2017 because I did not care at all for The Shape of Water, and I thought Dunkirk was clearly a superior film. The way that that story is told, that Christopher Nolan manages to get three different time periods, an hour, a day, and a week, integrated into this story so meticulously that it's amazing that it actually comes together. And I think that it's a much more interesting story to me than the artificial political story that The Shape of Water represents. The Shape of Water is fine. It's an interesting fantasy, but I didn't think that it was a very important film. Speaking of important films, and by the way, my criteria doesn't automatically mean that it has to be important. If there are films that are more entertaining and better put together,
Yes, of
it's
course.
got nothing to do with the significance or importance of it. And I got one of those coming up too. But in 1983, I think the film The Right Stuff managed to do something that was incredible, taking the Tom Wolfe novel that some people had suggested was not really possible to turn into a movie, and turned it into not only a coherent movie, but a very stirring movie. In terms of endearment, the winner there is a very nice film, and it is emotionally wrenching, and I can't say that it wasn't a tear jerker because it jerked plenty of tears out of me. But I found The Right Stuff to be heart-stopping and exciting. I loved all of these stories about the astronauts. But I grew up in the 60s, in the United States, and the astronauts were like the heroes of the time period. So I remember all of that and how important it was. And maybe that's influencing me, although I just think that all of those character actors who played the astronauts had some of the best parts of their careers there. Fred Ward and Scott Glenn are awesome in this movie, and Ed Harris, he as John Glenn was just pitch perfect in that particular role. And there
Have
are
you have you
lots of other little characters in this.
that's right.
Go
Have
ahead.
you seen the recent adaptation of The Right Stuff?
I have not.
Yeah, no, me neither. That's why I was wondering.
I'm not familiar with it. That was a TV thing, right? Or a Netflix thing or something like
Yeah,
that.
it was a TV thing.
I haven't looked at it, so. All right. And then proving that something that's important is not necessarily the thing that makes a movie valuable. In 1981, Chariots of Fire gives us an interesting historical story. It's inspiring and moving, but it beat Raiders of the Lost Ark, one of the best Spielberg films you can imagine, that's incredibly influential. It did things that other people had only dreamed of doing. It took pulp filmmaking from the 30s and 40s and turned it into art. And it's Raiders of the Lost Ark is one of the great achievements of Steven Spielberg's career. And the fact that it got beat by a movie that basically won because it had a nice soundtrack to it is frustrating to me. And then, as we've already talked about and hinted at,
Sorry.
in 1975,
Sorry for ruining that.
1975, well, I currently have a project going on. I've fallen off for a couple of weeks, but I've been doing a weekly project, a Throwback Thursdays on the films of 1975
Yes, I've
and
been
post a
following that.
review of all of them. Great. And you know what? I did a write-up of One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest, which is the film that won that year. It is a terrific film. Nicholson is great. I think that Louise Fletcher, it was obviously the high point of her career. There are several character actors in this movie that go on to great success. The movie is emotionally involving, but it beat Jaws, maybe, along with Raiders of the Lost Ark. The two, it is clearly, in my opinion, the best film Steven Spielberg's ever made, and it is the best film of the last 50 years. And if you don't understand why, please visit my site and read the 14 plus posts that I've written about the movie Jaws.
That's it. I think I would assume you'd have more.
More posts on Jaws?
Yeah, of
There are
course.
probably more than 10 or more than 14, but that's the last time I remember counting.
Oh, that's fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Thank you very much for that. That is a great list. So, Richard,
Good.
you have anything else you want to say about the movie in general?
I think It's a Wonderful Life is a perennial, obviously. Everybody wants to see it at the holiday time. I remember growing up as a kid when it was on, back when it was still in the public domain. They managed to steal it back out of the public domain. I'm sure that that's been a subject of conversation at some point or other on your show. But I, grew up in the era when every TV station was running It's a Wonderful Life. During the Christmas season, you could go from one station to another, and it was, the difference was 5 minutes. You were at a different 5 minute stage of
Oh,
the
wow.
movie. It was on, I think, because we had a lot of local channels that were looking for programming that was inexpensive to run. And
Or free.
in Southern California, yeah, exactly. And in Southern California, you had KTLA, KHJ, KTTV, and KCOP, which were all local stations, and they are the ones that all ran this movie on a regular basis, like I said, and probably several times a week because it was also one of those things. I re remember the scene in Gremlins where the mom is watching It's a Wonderful Life in the kitchen, and that's because it was on ubiquitously. It was everywhere when you looked around for it. So it's a great film. I've seen it in on the big screen two or three times. I've been
Oh,
very
wow.
fortunate to do that. And one of those times was at the TCM Film Festival when we had a great discussion from Craig Barron and who's his counterpart, the sound guy. Who did the sound for the Star Wars movies? Oh, Ben Burtt.
Oh,
Ben
okay.
Burtt. Ben Burtt and Craig Barron are, two behind the scenes guys. Each of them has won multiple Oscars for special effects and for sound effects, and they've been at the TCM Film Festival over the years featuring a particular movie, and they did information about It's a Wonderful Life and the special effects that were used to make that movie. You don't think of it as a special effects film, but there are some great sequences that they explained in their presentation. It's a terrific film. I'm glad that you picked it as your next project. I enjoyed talking about it last year when it was Movie of the Month for on the Lambcast, and I imagine it's going to last for several more months on your project, the Movie Rob Movie Minute.
Yes, it definitely will. All right, well, Richard, why don't you, for the one last time this season, tell people where they can find Richard Kirkham?
Well, you can listen to me on a weekly basis on the Lambcast, which is found at largeassmovieblogs.com. The Lambcast is the official podcast of the Large Association of Movie Blogs, which has over 2,000 members and counting. And we get together with four, five, sometimes six other bloggers, podcasters on a weekly basis and talk about current films, past films. We make up lists. We have arguments. It's a lot of fun. I do my own writing at Kirkham A Movie A Day. I have two sites for that project. There's a blogger site that you can reach at kirkhamclass.blogspot.com, and there's also a WordPress site, which is just kirkhamamovieaday.com. Both of them are easily accessed. All you have to do is Google Kirkham A Movie A Day. That's KIRKHAM. So don't spell it wrong because you'll find out something that you don't want to know. You're looking for me.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter, which is now for some reason called X. You can find me on Facebook, and you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Richard, thank you very much for joining me this week. It's always fun talking to you about movies, and I enjoyed it this
Boys and
week.
girls and movies, why do they need gin?
That's right. Yeah, we already found the answer to that one. I think Annie's a little she's out there.
Yep.
If she's asking why they, why do they need gin? I don't know. But yeah. So thank you very much for joining me. Like I said, I will be back on Monday with a new guest. And until then, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life with its tears.